You're with James Breslow on today's News Talk Radio, TNT.
And welcome back, everyone, to the James Breslow Show on TNT Radio in our final hour. If you want to look me up, just Google James Breslow, find me on social media, check out my writings for Epoch Times, epochtimes.com, and foxnews.com. We've got another great guest coming up for you this hour. It's Holly Seeliger. Hope I'm pronouncing that name right. She'll let us know in a minute. She served on the Portland Board of Education, the Portland School Board. So very curious to hear about her experience there, and also happens to be an expert in a whole host of very interesting conservative areas, including the death of Seth Rich, who was a Democrat National Committee staffer, murdered, and his murder is quite controversial since it happened right in the middle of the DNC email link. Definitely a conspiracy, some label a conspiracy theory that has been debunked and shouldn't be discussed any further. But on this program, we're not afraid to talk about conspiracy theories because we know there's only one way to get to the truth, and that's by exposing all sides. So we look forward to that conversation coming up with Holly later this hour. A couple pieces of news. Our good friend George Soros is back at it. We know what he's been doing to American cities by donating huge sums of money to leftist DAs, criminal justice reform. They believe that the laws are discriminatory because it happens to be that one minority group or another violates it more. So if, for instance, more blacks are violating this law, oh, then the law must be a racist law. That must be the problem. Or, of course, it's white supremacy that put in place the entire system, so it all must be taken down. That's the thought process of these DAs. The real problem is the system, not the individuals. The problem is the law, not the individuals. So when they break the law, oh, gee, we understand why that happened, because they live in a racist society. That's why they broke the law, and the law was put in place by white men, and that's why black men couldn't follow the law. And so police still arrest them. Actually, in many cases, police are not arresting them anymore because they don't want to be accused of racism. So they don't even bother fighting crime in the black neighborhoods anymore. So far fewer arrests. Even when they're arrested, they're let out the next day because we don't require them to post bond anymore because that's also racist and discriminatory. And then if they actually do get convicted, we just give them probation and we let them out early, etc. Anyway, that's what George Soros has put in place for America. Thank you so much, George. When is this guy going to die? I know that's not the most sophisticated analysis of the news, but I do wish for it, just like I can wish for Vladimir Putin to die. I wish for Soros to die. I think he's late 80s, living in New York, but not been a friend to America, that's for sure. It appears he wants to see an end to America and like it just to be folded in with the rest of the globe. Open borders, etc. So, anyway, as I said, he's back at it. Here's the story. Conservative radio star Lourdes Ubieta has quit Miami's iconic Spanish language conservative talk station, Radio Mambi, ahead of a planned takeover by a George Soros-linked liberal group, and she will instead move to upstart Americano Media on a full-time basis. So George Soros is now taking over U.S. media. We already know Jeff Bezos, multi-billionaire, took over the Washington Post. And now we've got George Soros taking over American media. And in this particular case, one that is Spanish-speaking in Miami, where it caters primarily to the Cuban population. Radio Mambi, which is historically linked to the Cuban exile community and offers an anti-communism view, oh, don't want to do that, would be controlled by a group of liberals partially funded by Soros, a far-left billionaire, if the $60 million deal is approved by the FCC. I'm sure they won't have a problem with that. I would never cut a deal with these people, Lourdes Ubieta said. Never, never, never. Good for her. She's refusing to work. This conservative radio star in Miami to the Spanish-speaking community is saying, I'm not going to work for Soros. She probably wouldn't have had a job there much longer anyway if she's a conservative host, but this is what we got coming for us next, control of the media, and we know how significant that can be. Anybody who watches CNN and MSNBC on a daily basis doesn't see what's really going on in this country. So control the media, you control the people. So Soros, starting with controlling our criminal justice system, now he's controlling our media. But just to leave it on a brighter note, I do have to provide some good news for us once in a while. Here's a story out of The Week magazine. Cassandra Ritter was heartbroken when her son Brody came home from school with a nearly empty yearbook. The Colorado sixth grader had asked classmates to sign his book, but only two or three did. To fill the empty space, Brody scrawled a note to himself. Hope you make some more friends! Exclamation mark. When older students heard about Brody's yearbook, over 100 of them gathered at his homeroom, asked to see his book, and left messages of encouragement to him and their phone numbers and invitations to hang out. It made me feel like I was not alone, said Brody. What a nice story. I do like one thing that's going on in our schools these days, mostly negative what's going on in our schools, but one of the positives is the no bullying policies. Bullying was a big deal when I was in school. School was not an easy place to be for everyone, and lots of children for being bullied for being different. And fortunately, there's been a very strong movement, anti-bullying movement, in schools, and I 100% support that and love what these kids did to support this other child in school. Hey everyone, join Misty Winston from Freedom Fest 2022 at the Mirage in Las Vegas from July 13th to the 16th. Freedom Fest is an annual festival where free minds meet to celebrate great books, great ideas, and great thinkers in an open-minded environment. Freedom Fest is the largest liberty event in the world, and it'll be heard only here on TNT Radio. Misty Winston at the Freedom Fest, July 13th to 16th at the Mirage. And by the way, if you've missed any of your favorite TNT Radio shows or interviews, simply listen back when you want. Wherever you want, just visit episodes on the TNT Radio website. We're also on all the major podcast platforms, including Apple, Google, Spotify, Amazon, Podbean, iHeart, and TuneIn. So now there's no reason to miss out on anything on TNT Radio.
Real talk when you need it most.
It's the topics that matter to me.
Today's News Talk Radio, TNT.
Hey, everybody. This is James Breslow's show, TNT Radio. And we have with us Holly Seeliger or Seeliger? Which one is it, Holly? Sorry.
It's Holly Seeliger. Thanks for having me on, James.
Seeliger. So, yeah, I was just doing a little background research on you. Very interested to hear about the Portland Board of Education. Are you still on that board?
No, I left there in 2019. I served 6 years on there, so pretty much the majority of my 20s. So I had put in a good amount of time on the board.
How do you get to be a member of the Portland Board of Education, especially when you're just in your 20s?
Well, I'm in Portland. I was in Portland, Maine, not Portland, Oregon. So it's a smaller one, but super liberal city. We're on the East Coast and up in Maine, smaller city. So I had run for office there. I had served 6 years, ran. It was back then when I ran it, those seats were kind of easy to get. I had gotten my bachelor's degree in political science and wanted to serve in office and thought I could start, you know, from the school board and thought it would be an easy job, but it was actually really difficult. And during that time, I was also doing local like cable access news, like journalism reporting. And then from there, jumped on to alternative media like YouTube and BitChute and whatnot.
Mm-hmm. Well, good for you. That's very impressive. And yeah, as you point out, nobody thought about school boards X years ago. And now that's all anyone talks about. They're all over the news constantly, what's going on with these school boards. So before we go into a little Seth Rich, which I do want to cover with you, but I am curious for you to share with us a little bit what your experience was like on that school board, because I understand you're conservative, generally speaking, in your thinking.
Well, that's the interesting thing. Since growing up and going to college in Portland, Maine, it was a super liberal city. So I had only ever been around like liberals, Democrat, mayor, the entire city council was Democrat, the entire school board was Democrat. There weren't any Republicans or conservatives on any of these boards or in any public office. So I had assumed I was a liberal. However, running and being on the board for that long, I started to realize the complete insanity from within the Democrat Party. And then just wanted to expose a lot of it because it just seemed so outrageous what we were going through.
So were any of the issues that we're hearing about now coming in front of school boards happening then, you know, whether it be issues regarding, you know, talking about gender identity at an inappropriate age or critical race theory, wokeness, all that kind of stuff?
Well, there was a really big push within the, and there still is within the Portland School Board about diversity. And I remember when I first got onto the board, they were celebrating that there were over 60 different languages being spoken in the Portland public schools. And that sounded like a nightmare to me. And privately, a lot of teachers would admit it was a logistical nightmare trying to get translators and trying to acclimate and teach students with that many languages going on. And the mayor at the time had declared Portland, Maine a sanctuary city. So there was a lot of change, demographic change going on within the city. And then also my last 2 years that I was on the board, I was finally put on as chair of the policy committee. And I know this sounds, well, your audience might understand, but I wanted to work to get a cell phone tower removed from the top of the high school because the school board had approved a cell phone tower on the top of the school after the fire department didn't want to have it on there. And so I was approached by teachers, students, parents, people who are concerned about the health effects, concerned about illnesses that they claimed they were experiencing from the radiation from the tower. But I was quickly told that I needed to work on the gender bathroom policy that was being handed to us from the governor. So I was charged with basically making sure that we had a gender policy that was inclusive for the bathrooms. And basically the only thing I was really able to do since it was handed down was to make sure that teachers weren't punished if they accidentally misgendered a student.
So what were they implementing as far as bathrooms?
They just wanted an inclusive policy where any student could use basically any bathroom they wanted or locker room at any time. So I don't know what the long-term ramifications are of that, but it did seem extremely confusing, especially when they were talking about students who would change their gender identity constantly.
And what about the teaching about gender identity at an early age? Did that come up?
Well, I had left the board in 2019, so it really was like right at the cusp of when a lot of this started. And honestly, I started to see some of the writing on the wall as far as how this was really expanding. I am glad to see more people wanting to run for the office, because we were managing $100 million budget. And I don't think people understand how much of your local taxes go into these school boards. I mean, hopefully, I think people are starting to understand as far as the lockdowns and the mandates, and then the type of education which children are and aren't receiving in public schools nowadays.
Yeah. I mean, people are now awoken to, you know, who's controlling what their kids are learning. It never used to be something that was controversial. It was, you know, reading, writing, and arithmetic. And all of a sudden, we're realizing that the history that's being taught is not the history that we were taught. And this issue of gender identity, you have lots of teachers out there that are asking children to tell the teacher their preferred pronouns on the first day of school.
Well, and they're allowed to change it constantly, and that can be extremely difficult to teach. I mean, we're having students who are now leaving school needing remedial math and English. We've got Common Core, which has absolutely collapsed the public schools. I think people are seeing the writing on the wall as far as the information that children are actually learning at this point is becoming extremely troubling. And we're coming out with people who can't even do basic math at this point.
Mm-hmm. So what have been, I'm sure you keep in touch or you still pay attention to the school board. Have any of these issues been brought forward by parents, you know, in particular,
Well, I think people need to understand that as long as these school boards and as long as your school district is taking federal money, you're going to have people telling you what sort of books and what sort of curriculum and what sort of learning environment you can have. So until we have some more local control over these boards and over the budget, and really stop taking federal money, honestly, at this point, as long as more federal money continues to flow down and become larger and larger parts of the budget, there really is no say locally as to what is being taught.
So you mentioned $100 million budget. How much of that was coming from the federal government?
Really not that much of it, which is kind of fascinating. I mean, they kept raising like the mill rate or whatever they call it, as far as homeowners putting more and more into it. But there was just enough of the federal money coming in to basically control like the curriculum, like what sort of school books the students were buying.
Yeah, that's what the federal government does all the time in so many different respects. And really something needs to be done about it. I think maybe even a legal challenge to it, because this is how they operate. They take our money from us and then they give it back to us with strings attached. And that's how the federal government controls things. You know, just to give the most basic example, but easy to understand, you know, why is the drinking age 21 in every single state? Why shouldn't each state decide what the drinking age should be? The reason is 21 is the federal government took money from each of the states, from the citizens of each, residents of each state, and then said, okay, you can have the money back and we'll give it to you to fix your roads, provided that the drinking age is 21. And boom, there you go. That's how the federal government makes sure that the drinking age is 21. It couldn't pass a federal law that said the drinking age is 21. It has to do it through this backdoor method. And that's the same thing, that this is how they control what our children are learning. The federal government takes our money and says, we'll give it back to you, provided you teach them the way we tell you to teach them.
Well, I think there was a great Supreme Court case that was just ruled on. I'm glad the Supreme Court ruled on this. It was Carson versus Macon, where Maine had a ban on using public funds at religious schools. And the Supreme Court ruled that Maine had violated the Constitution when it had refused to make public funding available to students to attend schools that provide religious instruction. So we're getting to the point, honestly, with a lot of the quote unquote woke culture, it is like a religion to these people. So, I mean, when you've got these schools turning around and saying that you can't use these funds for religious instruction. I'm glad that the Supreme Court ruled on that, and they're allowing parents to basically pull their kids out of public school at this point. This is really the only way that we can go against, like you said, the federalization of the of these schools, is that if parents pull their kids out.
Yeah, it's just, it is scary to think that the government is educating our children. When our government is this politicized, and the leftists have pretty much taken control of so much local government, and to think that they're in charge of educating our children, that doesn't sound good to me. So the idea of school choice is becoming more and more important in various places, because you know so many parents can't afford to send their children. They've only got one option, and that is the public school, where the government is going to be the one educating them. So school choice is a really critical issue. All right, we got to take our first break, and then I promise let's get into the Seth Rich scandal. I'm fascinated to hear your take on it. It's not something that I've dug into that much, but some serious questions regarding the killing of Seth Rich, a DNC staffer who was murdered in his apartment. We'll be back with Holly Seeliger after the break. You listen to the James Breslow Show, TNT Radio.
Free speech is in our DNA.
Experimental vaccines will never change that.
Listen to TNT Radio anywhere you go. Yeah, even there. Never miss out on the news and views of the big issues of the day. Ask Alexa or Google to play TNT Radio.
Or download the TNT Radio app for free.
From the App Store or Google Play. Today's news talk. This is TNT Radio.
Wokeness is infiltrating churches, and people don't really know what's hitting them.
Critical race theory assumes that racism is everywhere, it is in everything. These ideologies have crept into the church.
I have grown up with this invisible kind of bag of privilege.
And I know, as a white pastor, I have blind spots.
Reparations fits into the scope of the gospel.
It's a racist worldview. You're swimming in racism.
The social justice warriors say, if you're white, you are racist. And if you say that you are not a racist, then you have to be a white supremacist.
I see within evangelicalism today an attack on the very gospel itself.
Social justice doesn't have to do with justice, it has to do with Marxism.
Wokeness is now the dominant academic paradigm on many university and college campuses.
Many of our Christian universities have fallen prey.
I went to an all-black school, raised in a black context. Everything was oppression. White people are racist, cops can't be trusted, and this world is not for us, it's against us. We felt like the government owed us. I have a family, I have children, and I don't have a job. I was just, it was at the darkest point in my life.
Because I was white, would we have to divorce and separate due to my skin color?
Christianity enables people to find forgiveness and redemption. However, Marxism is completely vindictive.
There is no redeemer and there is no redemption in the religion of anti-racism.
I believe that the evangelical church today is going to have to make a decision. Are we going to submit to the culture, or are we going to remain true to the faith and take the consequences?
How the left is stealing your church. The invasion of the gospel of woke at salemnow.com.
The radio station everyone is talking about, TNT, where the longer you listen, the more reasons you find to keep listening.
Keep listening.
Today's news talk radio, TNT.
And welcome back, everyone, to the James Breslow Show. We're talking to Holly Seeliger, former member of the Portland School Board and now a conservative commentator. Tell us real quick where people can find you. I know I found your YouTube channel.
Yeah, I've got a YouTube channel called Zoan Politicon. It's on YouTube, BitChute, Minds. I'm on all the alternative platforms at this point because, as you had mentioned before, I had started reporting on the Seth Rich murder back in 2016. And I was quickly censored on a lot of the mainstream media.
Oh, yeah, that's going to happen. I've had the same experience with my podcast. It happened with me with anything COVID related. God forbid I didn't toe the the government's line about what exactly to say about COVID and about vaccines. I dared to stray from the script. I love giving these examples because it's just so absurd. I want to give you my example of what I got censored, and I'd love to hear what you got censored, because social media censorship is a huge, huge problem and a huge issue in America right now. So here's my three interviews that got censored. One is with a well-known actress who simply wanted to report the side effects that she experienced from the vaccine. A firsthand account of someone, I took the vaccine and here's what happened to me. It got taken down. Not allowed to say what happened to you when you took the vaccine. The other was a doctor, University of Wisconsin professor, an advisor to Congress, who simply wanted to come on and say that, hey, if you've already had COVID and you have natural immunity, you should be cautious about taking the vaccine. You could have some side effects if you take the vaccine when you've already got natural immunity. And the third one was a lawyer who represented individuals who were bringing a lawsuit against the vaccine mandate for firefighters. Los Angeles firefighters were opposing the vaccine mandate. They filed a lawsuit, and I'm simply talking to the lawyer about the lawsuit that represents the firefighters. Taken down. So thank God they're still allowed to speak in court, but they're not allowed to speak on YouTube, which is where this was. Professor from Wisconsin not allowed to give a warning to people that you might want to think twice about taking the vaccine. And he had taken the vaccine himself. And he was just cautioning people that if you've already had COVID, not to get it. And someone giving a firsthand account of their experience with the vaccine, all censored, taken down by YouTube. In fact, my entire channel was taken down for like a 30-day period because I was a bad boy for putting up this information, which is all just the truth. What's your story?
Yeah, I can imagine how much that really hurts. I mean, I've gotten channel strikes and whatnot. I mean, there really don't, as you know, there really is no rhyme or reason to the censorship. It's just whatever, I don't know, it pops up with the algorithm or it's constantly changing. It's so sad that we live in the state of America at this point where there's always something in the back of your mind, you know, wondering, hey, is this okay to put up? Is this not okay to put up? So most of my work, as far as I had started reporting on the Seth Rich murder, this was back in 2016. And some of them had gone, you know, semi-viral and whatnot. And I gained several thousand subscribers. And I was still on the school board at that point. So I don't think the Democrats, the other people I was on the board with, really appreciated that. But I was just reporting on the facts that the mainstream media was even just mentioning. So I guess the fact that his murder is unsolved, still unsolved to this day, and tied in with WikiLeaks. I know TNT was just mentioning the Julian Assange extradition that has been approved. So I think all of this will eventually come to a head as far as like the DNC fraud. And we're talking about fraud that goes back to 2016 now. So just a lot of that type of work was either scrubbed from the internet or has been removed, shadow banned, whatever you want to call it.
Yeah. In the meantime, these companies avoid exemption from any liability for anything that is put on their site. They can't be sued for it. They can't be sued for defamation, etc. They were given that immunity by the federal government to allow it to be an open platform. That's what allowed it to grow to be as big as it is, that they could just simply allow people to post on there and not have to review every single post before it goes on there for fear that they're going to get sued. It was a great, I think it's the section 226, I think is the section. I forget the section number that they refer to when they talk about this immunity. And yet here they are out there censoring information and they still have the immunity. So they've turned into editorial boards deciding what is appropriate to talk about and what is not. And therefore that exemption needs to be pulled from them. They need to now be sued anytime they allow something up there that might be defamatory of someone. They should be sued for it because they've chosen to become editorial boards like the New York Times.
Yeah, I think that's a great point. I mean, I'm sure you had many viewers and many subscribers up there, and actually probably made those platforms a lot of money as well, generated, you know, clicks and views and everything like that. And ultimately, at the end of the day, you have no idea, you know, what's going to be put up and what's taken down. And like you said, in your case, you were just reporting on what other people were saying. You weren't slandering anyone or anything like that. There's no reason for them to take down your work.
Yeah. Well, we know that they've got a leftist agenda and they are implementing it. So where are the safe spaces now on the internet? Where are the places that you're going and you're putting up your content where you feel comfortable that it's not going to be censored?
I've started to go up on Truth Social a bit. Obviously, I don't post anything on Twitter anymore. I just lurk on there. You know, it's funny to look on there. But I have some hope with BitChute and Rumble. Brighteon too is another good one. And then also like these radio shows, I think that's great. Some of this is still up there and your audience will find you. You know, a lot of us have had to learn to just keep bouncing around and trying different platforms.
Yeah, they haven't done a good job yet of censoring radio and podcasts. I'm sure that's coming. I'm sure they'd like to figure out how to do that. But I don't think I've heard really about that being censored. There are, when it comes to books, you see censorship of books. I know Amazon, for one, they censor books because they can. And they only censor, you know, right-leaning books, of course. But I think podcasts have been relatively safe from censorship thus far.
Have you heard of like the social credit system that could be in the works?
Yeah, but I roughly, but tell us what you know about it.
Well, I'm concerned as far as when we get all these platforms and all this information up there and with everything going forward, you know, it seems pretty obvious they're trying to crash the economy and put in like a central bank digital cryptocurrency. There's talk about that with the Fed right now. And then really, they'll just be able to control all of us completely online. So like we saw that in Canada where they were shutting off people's bank accounts. And we see this in the U.S. where people's Patreon or PayPal or their credit cards, debit cards are being shut off for, you know, wrongthink online. So definitely some big concerns about that I can see in the near future.
Yeah, just like the, was it the ESG scores, if I got the term right, that corporations are getting. If they're not doing what they should be for social justice and for equity, diversity, and inclusion, and for the environment, and for, you know, all the green stuff they need to be doing, if they aren't doing all the proper things, they're going to get a poor score. And then that means that certain banks won't lend to them. Certain investment banks won't invest in them unless you got the proper ESG score.
That's probably going to be like our carbon credit score here pretty soon, huh?
Yeah. Yeah. So yeah, just like corporations now are getting scored for how left you are, then individuals are going to be scored. And who knows, maybe they won't allow us on Tinder or something if we don't have our proper score.
Pretty
scary. It's definitely sounds like 1984, that's for sure. So let's dig into Seth Rich. Quite controversial, in fact, very dangerous to even be talking about him for the reasons kind of we just said. I just looked it up on Wikipedia real quick before we started, and I saw that Rich's family, I'll just read from it, denounced conspiracy theorists and said that those individuals were exploiting their son's death for political gain. And their spokesperson called for the conspiracy theorists. They called them disgusting sociopaths. They requested a retraction and apology from Fox News after the network promoted the conspiracy theory and sent a cease and desist letter to the investigator Fox News had used. Ultimately, there was a lawsuit, and Fox News, supposedly, according to Wikipedia, which who knows if you can trust Wikipedia these days, but it says that Fox News reached a seven-figure settlement with the Rich family in October of 2020. So, Holly, I ask you, are you one of those disgusting sociopaths?
Yeah, I guess I was. I mean, I was just questioning. I mean, I was hurt by that, the whole case. I mean, Seth and I were about the same age. I never worked for the Democratic Party, but he was working, you know, basically as a Bernie bro. And he had seen the election rigging and whatnot. I mean, it was blatantly obvious what was going on in 2016 within the Democratic Party, just stealing money from people, stealing votes, all of that. They DNC argued in a courtroom that they were a private corporation. They could decide who was going to be running for office in a, quote, smoke-filled back room. And Julian Assange had suggested back in 2016, Seth Rich was murdered in July of 2016, never solved. Washington, D.C., shot at 4 a.m. in the morning. Security cameras everywhere. Nothing was stolen. It was a, quote, botched robbery, which is still unsolved. Anyway, Assange had insinuated that they had received DNC emails from someone within the Democratic Party, and WikiLeaks put out a $20,000 money information, desiring information about the whereabouts or who had any information about what happened to Seth Rich. So it kind of insinuated that he could have been the leaker. And honestly, I feel bad for Rich's family. I can't imagine what they've had to go through, but it's still unsolved to this day. And there's still the security camera footage has still never been shown. And perhaps with Assange being extradited to the United States, a deposition could provide some information. So it's still pertinent to this day, so many years later.
Yeah. So I guess the party line at this point is that information leaked due to Russian hackers. Always convenient to blame things on Russia, Russia, Russia when you need to. So this is something they also blamed on Russia, Russia, Russia. But anyway, the whole thing is a fascinating story. I want to go back a little bit to the early part of it that you referenced, which is that Bernie Sanders in 2016 was going up against Hillary Clinton and doing exceptionally well. This guy who's the devout Democrat socialist, not even a member of the Democrat Party. I think maybe he was running for the Democrat nomination, so maybe he joined the party in order to do that. But traditionally, he was considered an independent senator. He was not part of the Democrats because the guy is a socialist. He was doing extremely well in the primary. I distinctly remember thinking, wow, this is crazy that a socialist could do this well, especially doing so well among young people. That was my first wake-up call to realize that young people in America are socialists. They're primarily socialists. I'm like, socialism and America just don't go together. There's two totally in opposite systems of government. It's total government control versus total people control. And yet, here's these young people in America that are voting for a socialist. So I found that to be bizarre, but I'm sure, you know, Hillary was quite surprised by it. And are you saying that the allegations were at the time that somehow the Democrat Party was trying to make sure that they steered things toward Hillary and away from Bernie?
Yeah, that was obvious. Where I was in Maine, I mean, tens of thousands of people showed up to go see Bernie Sanders speak. There was all kinds of money flowing in. People had Bernie Sanders signs up. I never saw Hillary Clinton sign up when I was in Portland, Maine. And this was like this is super liberal city. She had like 750 people come and visit her, but somehow she had won the primary. So it was blatantly obvious to me that it was rigged. And what I think about younger people being socialists, I guess, I think about the amount of student loan debt that people, young people are in past couple of generations, what we're up to like almost $1.8 trillion in student loan debt. So these people are basically on the dole to the federal government. People don't want to talk about it, but when you're in that much debt for decades, You're basically owned by the government. You can't get a mortgage, you know, all kinds of other types of debt. You can't really progress into the middle class at that point. And I think that's where a lot of that discussion with Bernie Sanders talking about, you know, addressing student loan debt, that's probably where the socialism comes in my mind.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, Bernie's very smart. He knows his audience. His audience are these 20-something-year-olds with a bunch of debt. And so he says, oh, you've been good to me. I'm going to be good to you. I'm going to excuse your debt. It's an interesting issue that's just kind of come out of left field. And one thing that not a lot of people pay attention to is the fact that it was during the Obama administration that the federal government took over all these loans. These used to be done by private banks. Yes, they were guaranteed by the federal government, but you were borrowing money from these banks. These banks were not going to just forgive these loans. But now that you're borrowing the money directly from the federal government, Obama acted as if at the time, oh, we're just cutting out the middleman. This is going to be much cheaper now. Who needs the banks? We'll just loan it to them directly. So now all of a sudden, everybody is indebted to the government. They owe the government. And that's when Obama started, you know, coming with this idea that, oh, well, maybe you could get out of paying the debt if you just went into service, into some type of civil service for the government. So let's get you nice and hocked up on debt, owing the federal government, and then the federal government gets to decide under what circumstances we'll forgive debt, you know, provided you do this or think that. Certainly, they're not going to alleviate everybody's debt, only for the debt for the people that they feel deserve it. Maybe with the right social credit score, then you get your debt relieved. That's probably what we're looking at. I'm sure that's what Bernie is thinking. All right, let's pick up with that Seth Rich story after our final break. You're listening to the James Breslow Show, TNT Radio.
Biden loves China. China loves Biden.
From Washington, D.C., this is the Morano Minute with your host, TNT Radio's Mark Morano.
President Joe Biden has praised China's authoritarian leadership. Yes, a bright and tough guy. Now it's China's turn to praise Joe Biden. In a July 2, 2022 message, Joe Biden is urging American gas stations to lower the price at the pump, calling it a time of war and global peril. Biden's message got the support of Chinese state media, with a man named Chen Weihe responding to the president, "Now U.S. presidents finally realize that capitalism is all about exploitation." He didn't believe this before.
Xi Jinping in China, who I know well. We don't agree on a lot of things. He's a bright and really tough guy.
And there you have it. When Biden praises China and China praises Biden, you know there's one person who's getting screwed. That is the American people. For the Morano Minute, this is Mark Morano on TNT Radio.
One kind thing, like giving us the clothes you don't wear anymore,
gets me a wheelchair and my independence back.
One kind thing, like raising money with a bake sale,
gives us comfort, food, and a warm smile after floods destroyed our home.
One kind thing, like challenging yourself to a sponsored cycle,
helps me sleep soundly, knowing my children have clean drinking water.
Choose your one kind thing and help change someone's world. Search British Red Cross today.
Challenging the consensus and debunking the narrative. This is Viewpoint.
In a March 19 executive order, President Zelensky invoked martial law to ban 11 opposition parties. The outlawed parties consisted of the entire left-wing socialists or anti-NATO parties in Ukraine, openly fascist and pro-Nazi parties like the Azov National Corps were unaffected by the presidential decree. President Zelensky ordered an unprecedented domestic propaganda initiative to nationalize all television news broadcasting and combine all channels into a single 24-hour channel called United News to tell the truth about war. On April 12th, President Zelensky announced the arrest of his main political rival, Viktor Medvedchuk, by the SBU security services.
Government is no longer working to protect our shared heritage, institutions, culture, and way of life. We're watching their deliberate destruction and dismantling, ready for replacement with something else.
What might that be?
Today's News Talk Radio, TNT.
And welcome back, everybody, to the James Breslow Show on TNT Radio. We're in our final segment with Holly Seeliger, former Portland School Board member, conservative commentator, and you can find her stuff on YouTube and Truth Social and BitChute. Tell them, what's the name of your YouTube channel again, Holly?
Yeah, it's called Zoon Politikon, Zoon Politikon. And it was a term that Plato used to mean man is a political animal. So I talk politics, geopolitics, a lot of economics too lately.
Cool. And I'm glad you explained that title because I was curious about it myself. I was going to have to look that up. So let's go back to Seth Rich in the time that we've got left. So remind us, what were the emails that were exposed from the DNC? What did they effectively say that was ultimately, you know, of course, extremely embarrassing to the DNC?
Well, it basically showed that the Democratic Party, as far as how they would pick their nominee, was completely rigged. It was from the very beginning. They were talking about the different types of records, the insiders within the Democratic Party, the money laundering, basically taking all of that money that they were using, claiming it was going to be running for Bernie Sanders and these, you know, his platform. And then at the very end, basically flipping it to Hillary Clinton.
And in particular, it was a pretty high level person whose emails were exposed, right? Do you recall who it was?
Well,
wasn't like the head of the DNC?
It went up through the entire DNC. I mean, I believe it was hundreds of thousands of emails. Basically, everything was dumped because Seth Rich himself was pretty high up within the Democratic Party as far as fundraising and his access within the Democratic Party. And of course, the mainstream media plays it down as if he was just some, you know, young 27-year-old guy, but he was really a genius within the party and obviously became disenfranchised.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, what's interesting is the whole thing kind of repeated itself 4 years later. You had kind of the old guard Democrat person, Hillary Clinton, Joe Biden, once again up against the Democrat socialist wonder kid, even though he's an old man, Bernie Sanders, who's getting all the love and support. I mean, nobody loved Hillary. Nobody loved Joe Biden, but everybody loves Bernie. At least the lefties do. So he's getting all the attention, and he was once again doing extremely well. And somehow they managed to get Biden elected over Bernie. And I think there's some serious deals that were cut on that. What's your analysis of that? Do you think the thing kind of repeated itself?
Yeah, I mean, they talked about within the Democratic Party, they had put out, it was like over 20,000 emails that WikiLeaks had put out. They had talked about the Democratic National Convention, everything within there. It's the same people. I mean, a lot of the same people, same money laundering, same people at the top. I mean, it's the nepotism that we see and kakisocracy, which means rule by the worst. So the most corrupt people, it seems like, as we see right now under the administration that we're under, it's like the most corrupt people, most blackmailed people are the ones who ultimately are at the very top.
Yeah, well, this time, the deal that was cut in order for Bernie to kind of step away and hand it over to Biden was that on the transition team, Bernie had huge representation. So in each of the different areas of deciding, you know, in the transition, who was going to be hired in various positions, my understanding was that in each group, Biden got to name three and Bernie got to name two. So Bernie was very influential in the transition and in all the hires. And if you look at this presidency, the way I describe this presidency is it's Bernie Sanders. Bernie Sanders is running this country. I can't think of anything that Bernie would have done different than Biden has done, other than maybe he would have forgiven school debt by now. But this seems to be Bernie Sanders in a Biden suit.
Well, I don't know. So the people really seem quiet about their support for Biden as opposed to their support for Bernie. You know, a lot of those, I would have thought a lot of the Bernie Sanders supporters would be still out there supporting Biden. You're right. It's pretty much the same. I mean, the green agenda that we're seeing, the whole push that we're seeing right now, as far as just we're just gonna have to deal with gas prices is basically what this administration is saying, or buy an electric car, right?
Yeah, everything is anti-capitalism, pro-green, open borders, woke society, affirmative action, all the things that Bernie loves, it seems to me. Bernie finally won. Or, you know, a combination of that, you know, this is also a lot of Obamaites that are running things. And, you know, Obama was probably further left than we realized. He was a very good politician, so he knew very well how to watch what he said. But at the end of the day, Obama's probably further left than he leads on.
Well, my flip to, I guess what you would call conservatism, was just seeing what happened, what Obama did back in 2008 with what we call the Great Recession, you know, the too big to bail, too big to jail. And like you said, with the student loan debt just raising interest rates, and colleges just exploded with their price per credit. And we were just supposed to deal with it. And now we're at years of inflation. And now finally, people are starting to understand how you can't just keep printing money forever and just expect that the US dollar is going to continue to be strong in that matter.
Yeah. So in your view, you're saying you don't think the Seth Rich murder is solved, even though Wikipedia says that it is solved, that it was a botched robbery. But certainly you're saying that they have not found the murderer.
Well, I think perhaps Julian Assange knows, and I think that's probably where some of this information could be helpful if he is extradited to the United States. The case is still open. It's an unsolved botched robbery. So, you know, that I've never right. heard of anything
but,
like
Assange,
that.
Assange comes into it, though, because he knows, obviously, how he got the emails, right? He either got them from Seth Rich, or he got them from Russians, or he got them from somewhere else. What has Assange said on the record about it?
He has insinuated, this was on a Dutch TV back in 2016. He had said that although they don't reveal their sources, he said sometimes individuals die in their pursuit of giving them information. And this included the DNC emails. So pretty much spelling it out for people what happened with Seth Rich and his laptop, even though the official narrative says that it was the Russians.
And tell me about the laptop.
Well, that's people believe that was the information. Seth Rich's laptop disappeared. There was, I believe, the DNC WikiLeaks email drop had close to several tens of thousands of emails and links, like PDF type files and everything. And so someone would have had to have been basically working within the DNC to provide that type of information to WikiLeaks. So that information is still unknown, but there are a lot of people who claim it probably was through a laptop and a flash drive, the way that the files were transferred to WikiLeaks.
So as opposed to some type of hacking from afar, like from Russia.
Right. Someone right. would have had to physically hand it over to a source.
Uh-huh. And that's based on an analysis of what Assange got. But how is it even public? How do we know exactly what Assange got?
A lot of that was revealed by WikiLeaks and their someone named Guccifer 2.0, who was part of the the WikiLeaks team and as far as putting that information out there. So all of those were leaked. I think it was like 53,000 emails, part of the Democratic National Committee email leak. And so people still to this day don't know. I mean, they claim that people within the Democratic Party gave that information out. So it was probably Seth Rich.
Well, it's a wild story that obviously deserves more investigation. People should not be shut up about it. That's for sure. They're not going to be shut up here on TNT Radio like you would be on U.S. social media regarding this story. The murder of Seth Rich. What really happened? Still have not found the killer. Holly Seeliger, thank you so much for coming on the program. Everybody go check her out. Just Google her name, Holly Seeliger. Holly, thanks for joining the program.
Thanks, James.
And thank you all for listening to the James Bressler Show on TNT Radio. We'll be back at you tomorrow.